from LadVox Studios in Seattle, Washington. This is Web Talk Guys Radio at WebTalkGuys.com. Thank you for listening today. My name is Rob Greenlee, and I'm joined by my web girl sidekick, Dana.
Thanks, Rob. Microsoft's interest in search engine technology and internet media in general has a lot less to do with beating Google and Yahoo, and a lot more to do with ensuring that the next version of Windows has enough features to persuade customers to pony up for the new Longhorn, or whatever it's called, Windows operating system upgrade. John Battelle, founder of the Industry Standard and co-founding editor of Wired Magazine, joins us to discuss his new Business 2.0 article about Microsoft's entry into the competitive search engine marketplace.
So what they're going to do is integrate search into their next version of Windows. Microsoft's goal, as it always has been, is to embrace and extend any application or technology which is seen as encroaching upon the desktop experience, which they believe is their right to own. You know, they do own it. So search is clearly one of those kinds of applications that is crucial to winning on the desktop, and therefore Microsoft has committed an awful lot of resources to being a dominant player in that game. And very much like Microsoft, they waited until it was clear that this application search was going to be around for the long term.
Dana, I just got back from attending the Hot Search Engine Strategies Conference down in San Jose, California, as search marketing has become a hot $7 to $14 billion industry. It's incredible, the growth there. And I recorded some audio from the historic launch meeting of Search Engine Marketing Professionals Association, or SEMPO, at sempo.org. And we're going to air some speeches given by Danny Sullivan, editor of SearchEngineWatch.com, and Safa Arashi, who is the U.S. Bank Corp, Piper Jaffray Senior Research Analyst for Internet and Marketing. Both of them are going to tell us why this new SEMPO organization is needed, and we'll talk about the growth potential of search marketing and advertising.
Nobody that I really know started out, or originally started out saying, I'm going to be a search engine marketer. They were all up to something else. Now the kids are learning to get to school.
It's time to go to our internet news desk for a brief summary of this week on the web.
Well, Dana, the U.S. coasts rule American internet use, don't they?
Oh, so the East and West Coast use the internet a little bit more than the other parts?
Yes. For all of our folks that listen to this show from outside of the United States, this is really a story that pertains just to the United States. And I guess fewer than half of all Southerners, that's within the United States, go online, where the East and West Coast really dominate that, and is well over 50%.
Now, Pew Internet and American Life Project did a research study. And what did they attribute that to?
The higher level of education and income levels in the areas on the coast. And I think if you look at the demographics of it, that follows right along with what they're saying here.
My apologies to everybody in the Midwest, North and South. We're not saying that you're not educated, okay? This is just Pew's research.
That's right. This is just percentages. It's not singling out anybody particular.
Well, Rob, speaking of trends and what people have researched, I guess the dot-com e-commerce promise is now coming to fruition.
Yeah, there's actually two areas where the businesses out there that have been trying to make the internet and the online thing turn a profit are starting to see some signs of life here. Basically, a lot of companies have been trying to take basic offline operations and convert them over to successful e-businesses. And two of the functions online have proved to be profitable, and that's retailing and advertising, which have both been something that have been successful offline, are starting to show some serious signs of life on the online world.
So with it looking at a 5-6 year lag time to build up a certain amount of credibility, I guess, and now it's taking off.
Well, and knowledge and understanding what the consumer wants that's online and how to better serve their needs is really what we're seeing here. And the whole dot-com promise that the whole stock market blew up about is starting to come true now. So, and it's funny how this trend is happening right along with the stock market starting to come back. And that's something I've always said is that it was technology that was going to take us down, and it's going to be technology that brings us back.
Rob, another part of the internet industry that has matured, unfortunately, is spam.
Yeah.
And Earthlink has put its foot down.
Yes, they filed a lawsuit against 100 email users that are mostly, and what's really interesting about this is most of them are in the state of Alabama. And, well, and in Canada is where they're actually filing these lawsuits. And I guess these 100 people are basically being accused of going after stolen credit cards and doing identity theft and bank fraud using the internet, and sent out about 250 million pieces of junk mail.
Just 100 people? You do the math. Well, I want to open up our digital mailbag and read a couple of, one email and a phone call that we got. The first one we heard from Phil near Miami, Florida.
Yes, he says, good show. Since he's gotten bored with FM and AM radio, and I can totally understand that, he's being forced to start looking around for other shows to listen to via MP3 and bring them to work with him, because I guess he has a pretty brain-dead job, I guess. So he's trying to listen to some good shows, and he's using the Winamp player on his laptop to do that.
I like that, the laptop as an MP3 player.
Mm-hmm.
Very portable there, Phil. He has some ideas for upcoming shows. Why don't you quickly tell us what he's wanting to learn.
Well, he wants to hear more about spam and how it's going to get stopped, some of the ways that people can adopt technology to help fight this. And he also wants us to talk about scumware, also open source versus closed source, and not necessarily Windows versus Linux. So I think he's taking a little bit of a angle here on government conspiracies and how open source and closed source locks the government out.
Well, the other night I got a call really late at night, and it wasn't that late from where it came from, New Zealand. And I guess Ryan, who's the founder of AudioEmails.com, was calling up WebTalk Guy's studio to see if we could offer him some help on some little challenge he was facing with some streaming media. Well, like I said, Ryan runs a site called AudioEmails.com, which is, I mentioned that I would definitely talk about him for a moment on the air. His site presents some of the best motivational speakers out there, like Anthony Robbins and Zig Ziglar,
mm-hmm.
and they give little 15-minute online audio bits that can be delivered right to your inbox on a weekly basis. So anybody who's interested in that kind of motivation, go to AudioEmails.com, and Ryan down there in New Zealand will set you up.
So, Dana, what time exactly did Ryan call you?
Was I working about, I don't know, 1 a.m. or something like that?
Well, he's on the other end of the globe down in New Zealand, so he kind of got a little messed up with our time zones.
Well, you know, when the phone rings at 1 a.m., it's either something really bad or, I don't know, or just a wrong phone call, and I just had to find out. If you guys have heard any other interesting web news this past week or coming up, just don't hesitate to let us know. You just need to email us at robg@webtalkguys.com or dana@webtalkguys.com, and we'll do our best to get your thoughts, your comments, and your questions on the show.
And we want to remind you, the Web Talk Guys is available for on-demand listening anytime as a downloadable MP3 file or Windows Media file format from the WebTalkGuys.com website. And you can get it anytime to play back on your schedule. And we're now up on the Microsoft Sync & Go product out there. Or that's actually their software product that enables synchronization with your Pocket PC. So go check us out if you have a Pocket PC.
Oh, and just today, Robbie, we're talking to a fellow from WindowsMedia.com who said that he was going to put Web Talk Guys right up there on the news link. If you go to radio
mm-hmm.
and news, we will have apparently a little picture. We bumped off the BBC.
I know.
BBC was listed there. Their streams are unreliable. We're going to put Web Talk Guys right up there.
So it's safe to say that we've arrived now because we actually bumped the BBC off of WindowsMedia.com now?
We're very happy. Everybody go and click on it. Wanted to say a quick thank you to some very good friends of the show. Support for Web Talk Guys every week is provided by Compass Communications. They're a network and server co-location provider in Seattle at ccom.net. Also, justforyucks.com. They provide support for our show, and they offer you a lot of cartoon and wordplay design shirts, mouse pads, coasters, and stuff at justforyucks.com. And mustn't forget mailwiper.com. If you don't like spam, check out mailwiper.com. You can see the banner right on our website. We have a whole list of other sponsored links that are on the top and the bottom of every page of the Web.guys website.
PayByCheck.com also provides support to the show, and they offer an easy way to accept industry-leading online e-commerce payment via your regular checking account. And we really appreciate it if you would give them all your support. Go visit PayByCheck.com.
John Battelle, founder of the Industry Standard, may it rest in peace, and co-founding editor of Wired Magazine, joins us next to discuss his new Business 2.0 article about Microsoft's entry into the competitive search engine marketplace.
Stay connected because you don't want to miss that. This is WebTalk Eyes Radio. Hey, dig my shirt.
Ooh, Rubber Baby Bunker Busters. Oh, that's funny. Where'd you get it?
JustForYucks.com.
Oh, JustForYucks.com.
Yeah, JustForYucks.com. They have more than 200 original designs available on t-shirts and mouse pads.
Oh, that's one of those cheapo t-shirts.
No. This is a high-quality Hanes t-shirt. And JustForYucks.com also carries funny mouse pads, coasters, buttons, magnets, and keychains.
Keychains, that's great. I better check out JustForYucks.com.
Hi, this is Rob Greenlee of WebTalk Guys Radio. I have a tip for you that will cut your inbox spam down to zero, guaranteed. The solution is a very powerful software plugin called MailWiper, and it cleaned my inbox of all my hundreds of unwanted emails and continues to do so every day, 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. MailWiper currently works with Outlook and Outlook Express for Microsoft and supports multiple email accounts. Definitely stop deleting emails. Do your part to fight spam. MailWiper can be downloaded and installed in seconds and set up within a half an hour. There is no monthly fee or annual fees ever. Get your life back. I did. Go to MailWiper.com now and save over 40% off the regular $49.95 price. Get MailWiper now for $29.95 by visiting MailWiper.com. MailWiper comes with a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee and free technical support. Remember, save 40% now off of the regular $49.95 price by going to MailWiper.com right now.
Please, children, scooch closer. Don't make me tell you again about the scooching.
This is WebTalk Guys Radio, and I'm Rob Greenlee.
And I'm Dana. Microsoft's growing competitive interest in the search engine marketplace has a lot less to do with beating Google or Yahoo for the search ad market scraps. The motivation has more to do with ensuring that the next version of Windows has enough good features to persuade customers to pony up for that new Longhorn Windows OS upgrade.
Joining us is John Battelle, who directs the business reporting program for UC Berkeley's Graduate School of Journalism. And he is also the past founder of the Industry Standard and a co-founding editor of Wired. And he's here to discuss his new Business 2.0 article about Microsoft's entry into the competitive search engine marketplace. John, thank you for joining us. Why has search become such a hot item online right now?
I think search has always been a very important application, probably second only to email in importance to the Internet. From the very beginning, search was how we understood where to go on the Internet. And today, search has increasingly become a way that companies have understood how to market to potential buyers of goods and services. And it turns out that people who are searching are, in fact, looking for something. So it's a pretty good match.
Yeah, well, let's talk about the state of search right now. With Yahoo, Microsoft, and Google still being in the game here, where is the America Online folks in all this?
Well, they've decided to outsource their technology, so to speak. Technology of search is extremely complicated and only getting more so. And you have to be very committed to staying on the cutting edge. And that means you've got to have a huge technology and R&D group, which Yahoo, Microsoft, and Google all have committed to. However, AOL is more of a content and media-driven company, particularly with their merger with Time Warner. So they've outsourced their technology for the most part to Google. And we'll probably continue to do that in the medium term.
Why do you think that the key driver now is no longer content, but intent?
Yeah, that's my catchy little phrase, intent over content. And it's one that I've sort of been preaching for quite a while, both in the way you design websites in general, with the intent of the user in mind, as opposed to the content you have to provide in mind. And it really is a reflection of the sort of reversal of priorities when you move from static media to interactive media. Priorities in static media are content, because you are determining what content you think is important as a publisher, and you are laying it out for the reader, who brings a certain amount of intent to the game, but not nearly as much as in interactive media, where the layout, so to speak, of the content is entirely driven by the intent of the user.
Mm-hmm.
And when you switch over to marketing, you know, the ad page side of the equation, the intent of the user is incredibly important, because the more you know about the intent of the user, the more refined your message can be toward that intent. So if you go to a search box and type in Ford Taurus, there's a pretty high probability the intent of the user is to learn more about that car, which means there's a pretty high probability they may be looking to buy it. That kind of a buyer is far more valuable than someone watching football on a Sunday afternoon who sees a Ford Taurus ad. There's probably very little intent to buy a Ford Taurus with the vast majority of people who see that television commercial. But for people who type it into a search box, the intent is much, much higher.
Now, that intent has been there all along. It's just we're just now recognizing it.
Yeah, I think so. People forget that it's been only 7 or 8 years since marketing on the Internet has come into any kind of recognizable form. The first 3, 4, 5 years of marketing on the Internet, I think we brought some of the same presumptions about marketing into the interactive world that we had always had in the static world, and that was that there is a very clear separation between editorial and advertising, and that that separation dictates that ads are not desired by the audience.
Mm-hmm.
When in fact, in many, many cases, a very high percentage of cases when people are using search engines, in fact, what they're looking for is a commercial product.
Yeah.
And they would be completely satisfied if the search returned links to commercial products, which is a, you know, you don't pick up a magazine very often with the intent of finding a commercial product, unless that magazine happens to be, you know, say a mountain biking magazine, and you're looking to buy a mountain bike. But in a search engine, a person approaches the search engine with any number of hundreds of millions of potential queries. And the magic of search is that if those queries match commercial interests, you can immediately make the match from an advertising standpoint and then collect the value of that matchmaking, which is exactly what the search engines are now doing.
Certainly seems like that the content piece is actually driving the online experience from a product standpoint as well. I mean, it seems like what you're saying is that in the past we were very product-driven, but now it looks like we're more content-driven in relation to how that content relates to the product.
You know, since time immemorial, there's been sort of a funnel of product marketing, which starts with the idea of, well, I'm interested in the classic example of the digital camera, but I don't know anything about it. So I want to read reviews, and I want to, you know, maybe I want to go over to a photography site and find out whether or not a digital camera is as good as a regular camera, and so on and so forth. But once I feel informed, then I want to see what my choices are, and then I want to compare them. And once I sort of determined the two or three that I'm interested in, I want to research those products. And once I determine the one that I think I like, I want to buy it. And that whole process, which starts very broad and gets very specific, is a process that's well understood by most marketers. However, only with interactive media and search media in particular can you follow that process from the beginning to the end with a very specific kind of marketing that includes content as well as marketing messages. And that's why publishers, such as in this case, CNET is a good example, are figuring out ways to bring their readers through that whole process in a way that doesn't get in their way, but also helps them make a decision about buying products.
So is there a danger of content becoming biased in this pursuit of the almighty dollar and the sale of products?
Absolutely. There's more than a danger of it. I think there's probably proven cases of it. But the fact is that at the end of the day, there are rules that apply no matter what medium you're in, and one of them is trust, that the consumer has to trust the publisher, and the consumer has to trust the marketer. And if you break that trust, it's not easily restored. And this is a really critical issue right now for all the search engine marketers out there, and it's one in which, for example, Google has sort of pinned their reputation to being the most trustworthy search engine, in that they do not accept paid inclusion, which is the process whereby marketers pay to ensure that the web search engine spiders their site. In other words, goes over their site and makes sure that they're included in Google's list. Google will not allow that to happen. They do what they call a pure spidering or pure search. Others, such as Yahoo, do have paid inclusion and don't consider it to be a negative, because they aren't making judgments as to how high a particular page ranks. They're just ensuring through a paid inclusion product that those marketers' pages are, in fact, in the index. You know, it's not too hard to make the next logical step, which is, well, maybe if you pay a little more, you get a little higher.
Yeah.
They claim, of course, that doesn't happen, and I'm sure it doesn't. But, you know, there are many opportunities to do these kinds of things when you are in charge of how things are reflected to the user. Yahoo has, obviously, a huge amount of content beyond just their search engine.
Mm-hmm.
And they push their content first before others. And they'll always say, you know, here's Yahoo's premier content or Yahoo's network sites or so on and so forth, and Microsoft will do the same. If you're going to search on, you know, mutual funds, you're probably going to get Microsoft Money stuff pushed at you before you get, you know, Morningstar's pure search results. Google's claim to fame is that they don't have any of that. Whatever comes first is what comes first, and it doesn't have anything to do with any deals that they've cut with any marketers. I think both approaches have value, because I think Microsoft Money or Yahoo Finance are very good sites. You know, it's really up to the user to make the determinations as to whether or not they think they're being served. And they do, because they're just one click away from the next place.
The whole content portal concept, which Yahoo's hung on to, but most of the other search engines have walked away from, it appears that the jury's still out on whether or not that's an advantage for them or not.
Well, you could certainly argue it both ways. The fact is that it's working now for Yahoo, and it's certainly working for AOL. If you look at AOL as a content play and not as a failing division of America Online, Time Warner Incorporated.
Yeah.
You could also argue that, you know, in this day and age, consumers are looking for whatever is right for them and not for whatever publishers think is right for them. On the other hand, the whole point of being a publisher is that you are bringing together information that otherwise a consumer would have a hard time putting together on their own. So there's value to both sides of the equation, and I think that both models will probably continue to thrive.
Certainly seems like Google is moving towards that direction a little bit with their Google News product that they have and some of the other initiatives that they have, but they're obviously not going toward that whole portal
concept. I sort of call Google's strategy with regards to this a portal in waiting. in other words, you know, they're obsessive about having as few number of kilobytes or even just bytes on their page, on the homepage, the Google homepage. So when you go to the Google homepage, it is very, very crisp, very clean.
Minimalistic.
Very minimalistic, and will remain so, I am sure, for a very long time. They're extremely committed to that. On the other hand, they do have a lot of other things that are associated with Google. Google News, the Frugal Shopping Guide, their recent acquisition of Blogger.com, their acquisition of the Usenet, which is now called Google Groups, which you could compare to many of the failed strategies of portals gone by, like Excite, or Yahoo, which bought GeoCities, communities. Now, all of these things make sense for Google for reasons that have nothing to do with leveraging the power of their homepage, but rather leveraging the power of their search engine. Blogger is an example of a community that's obsessed with links, and Google is obsessed with links. That's one of the ways that they ensure their results are good. So even as an R&D expenditure, it made a lot of sense for them.
We're in the middle of a conversation with John Battelle, who directs the business reporting program at UC Berkeley's Grad School of Journalism. More with John in a moment. You're listening to Web Talk Eyes Radio. Hi, this is Web Girl Dana of Web Talk Eyes Radio. Now, I have a tip for you out there if you get a lot of spam in your inbox, and I can tell you how to get it down to zero, guaranteed. See, my solution is the very powerful software plugin called Mail Wiper, and it cleaned my inbox of all of those hundreds of unwanted emails that I get every day, and it does it 24/7. Mail Wiper currently works with Outlook and Outlook Express from Microsoft, and it supports multiple email accounts. So just stop hitting the delete button. Do your part to fight spam. Mail Wiper can be downloaded and installed in just a few seconds and set up within a half an hour. There are no monthly or annual fees either, and you can get your life back. I know I did, and I'm very happy, and so is my husband. So go to mailwiper.com right now, and you can save over 40% off the regular $49.95 price, because you can get Mail Wiper now for $29.95, and you can go to mailwiper.com and get it right there. Mail Wiper comes with a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee, and you know what? It has free technical support. That's amazing. So save over 40% off the $49.95 price and get Mail Wiper now for $29.95 at mailwiper.com.
Hey, dig my shirt.
Ooh, rubber baby bunker busters. Oh, that's funny. Where'd you get it?
Justforyucks.com.
Oh, justforyucks.com.
Yeah, justforyucks.com. They have more than 200 original designs available on t-shirts and mouse pads.
Oh, that's one of those cheapo t-shirts.
No. This is a high-quality Hanes t-shirt. And justforyucks.com also carries funny mouse pads, coasters, buttons, magnets, and keychains.
Keychains, that's great. I better check out justforyucks.com.
It's Web Talk Guys Radio. My name is Rob Greenlee.
This is Dana, and we're joined by John Battelle. He's on the phone with us talking about his new article in Business 2.0 about Microsoft's bid to be competitive in the search engine marketplace.
Some folks out there that are saying that the industry is going to grow at about 35% and one day be about a $7 billion online industry.
Right.
What's your thought on that? Is that really possible, or and
I
why?
I think it is. I don't claim to be an expert modeling markets, but the same people who will tell you that the industry is going to grow from $2 billion now, which it has clearly surpassed $2 billion right now, but from $2 billion in 2003 to $7 billion 5 years from now, will privately tell you that they think it's really going to double. It's not actually going to be $2 billion to $7. It's going to be $2 billion to $14.
Really?
They don't want to put that in their reports because then they'll start looking like all those late 90s prophets who got their head handed to them. But what we've got here is a combination of any number of factors in a market which is primed for reimagination. And by that I mean, if you look at the Yellow Pages market in the United States, it's a multi-hundred-billion-dollar market. And then if you look at the direct mail business, it's close to that figure in size. And if you look at the telemarketing business, those annoying phone calls that everyone gets, that's a business that was huge and is getting smaller because of the do not call list.
Mm-hmm.
You roll all that together and you've got, an extremely large marketing business that already exists, which increasingly is failing to work because the new class of consumers, folks who grew up using computers and grew up using the internet, do not turn to the Yellow Pages first when they need a plumber. They turn to Google, or they turn to Microsoft, or they turn to Yahoo, and they'll put in Plumber Manhattan if they live in Manhattan, and they'll see which plumbers come up, and that's where they'll get the plumber's phone number. That trend is certainly only growing. So if you look at the size of the marketing world compared to the size of the search business, search is just a tiny percentage of that huge multi-hundred-billion-dollar market. But it will be growing quite dramatically, and I don't think there's really any refuting the fact that the next generation of consumers are going to be extremely wired and habitually much more prone to use the internet to find what they need as opposed to using Yellow Pages or responding to direct mail junk that comes in your mailbox.
Seems like what you're talking about is localized search, and that's not something that the internet's done a very good job of.
Not yet, but all three of the major players are very focused on getting localized search rolled out probably by the middle to the end of next year. And localized search already kind of works, and people are starting to figure out how to make it work. If I'm looking for somebody to install Windows where I live in California, I just punch in, new Windows, and then my city, and I find all the vendors who might be available. And frankly, I don't really want to work with anybody who doesn't have a web page, because if I can't work with them in the way that I'm used to working with people now, which is by email, then I don't want to work with them. And increasingly small business, which is, the driver of the American economy, despite all the, news about huge corporations that dominates the headlines, small business drives two-thirds of our economy, if not more.
Yeah. That's true.
They're getting very smart to this and are finding this channel to be extremely profitable as a way to find new customers and keep their current ones.
Still, I think that there's only like 40 or 50% of the businesses in the United States have a website, so I think that there's still some growth opportunity there.
Which is one of the reasons Microsoft's so interested in this market. Microsoft has been focused on the small business market for the last few years, and it was one of the internal memos that Steve Ballmer wrote a couple years ago. Microsoft's imperative is to grow, and when you're a small company, growing is not nearly as hard as when you're Microsoft.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to look around for the big opportunities, and the two big opportunities that this company is focused on now are search and small business. And you put them together, equivalent of the Yellow Pages on steroids, I would say.
So is that the real motivation here of Microsoft to jump into the whole search fray? I know they've been outsourcing most of their technology up to this point, and there's been certainly a lot of rumor and discussion and what appears to be action up at Microsoft to develop their own technologies. What is going on there, and what's their motivation?
Well, I think that they've realized, much as they did in 1995 with the Internet, that search is kind of the baseline interface to the Internet,
mm-hmm.
that people generally tend to do two things when it comes to the Internet. Number one, they have a set of, and the research shows, up to about 20 sites that they constantly monitor, you know, and they may be the local sports teams and some mm-hmm. news channels that a particular person likes, and maybe a couple of hobbyist sites that pertain to things they're interested in. But it rarely goes past about 20. It does settle into sort of the 12 to 15 range, which is, you know, interestingly, about how many cable channels anybody actually pays attention to. And, you know, you may have 250 of them at your disposal, but you really only check about 12.
Mm-hmm.
So that's habit number one. Habit number two is when they need something that is not found in those 12, they turn to search. So you put those two together and you think about how people use the Internet and the fact that the Internet, it has become sort of a de facto interface to computing, period. Now, the fact that the Internet is critical to computing is something Microsoft realized in 1995, and that's why they came out and dominated the market with Internet Explorer.
Mm-hmm.
But the search thing is a relatively new realization for Microsoft. So what they're going to do is integrate search into their next version of Windows, such that when you need to find something, if you're running Windows, the search will be wherever you happen to be within Windows or all the applications that run on Windows. So there'll be a search feature built into the functionality of Windows that automatically pings Microsoft's own search engine. And further down the line, I'm sure it will be integrated with a marketing machine, not unlike the one that they currently outsource to Overture. So you put it all together, and I think Microsoft's goal, as it always has been, is to embrace and extend any application or technology which is seen as encroaching upon the desktop experience, which they believe is their right to own. You know, they do own it. So search is clearly one of those kinds of applications that is crucial to winning on the desktop, and mm-hmm. therefore Microsoft has committed an awful lot of resources to being a dominant player in that game. And very much like Microsoft, they waited until it was clear that this application, search, was going to be around for the long term. Very similar to what they did with Windows. They waited, you know, a good long time to ensure that what Apple had envisioned was going to be the way computing was going. When they decided it was, they created Windows, and it took them three or four versions to get it right. But once they did, they, of course, dominated the market.
Now, there's been a lot of talk about Microsoft not building their own stuff, but acquiring. And there's been this discussion of Google and even Yahoo. What's
right.
your thoughts on the discussion out there about Microsoft just going out and buying what they need?
I think that, you know, you can never discount that. Microsoft has more cash than most
like
nations.
$49 billion or some huge
amount.
Yeah,
and they throw off another $4 or $5 billion a quarter, I think it is. Anyways, a lot, let's put it that way. The fact is, they will buy, I think, only if they run into troubles building. In other words, every company makes the same calculation when they determine whether they're going to build something of their own, or they're going to buy it. And it's a very complicated calculation when it comes to search, because you've got patent issues and you've got integration of things purchased. I think the idea that they might buy Yahoo is a very difficult one.
Yeah, I would think buying Yahoo would be a complicated one for them.
Not only because Yahoo is currently going through what will be a multi-year indigestion problem of their own.
Exactly.
But that Yahoo is more than search technology. It's a major portal and network, and there'd be antitrust issues for Microsoft particularly mm-hmm. because of Microsoft Network. Google, there would also be some antitrust issues. Google's a private company currently, and I think the owners are pretty dead set against the idea of selling out. Don't forget that the venture capitalists behind Google, particularly John Doerr, have never had a particularly friendly eye when it comes to Microsoft. They've always sort of backed the folks who have fought Microsoft from the Valley.
Mm-hmm.
And there's that Valley-Redmond kind of ongoing cultural war.
Yeah.
On the other hand, the two companies are quite similar, and I wouldn't rule it out.
Well, plus, you know, if Microsoft walks in with a huge check, I'm sure that there's a little bit of a motivator there.
Well, exactly. Everybody has a price.
Mm-hmm.
I think what's more likely is based on a review of technology and patents and so on, that Microsoft makes some strategic acquisitions that complement its current research efforts in CERT. And there are companies that have patents that may or may not make sense from that perspective. For example, there's LookSmart or Ask Jeeves. LookSmart has a marketing platform, not unlike Overture's paid inclusion platform, which they currently support Microsoft with at the moment. And Ask Jeeves has a number of search patents that might prove valuable to Microsoft. But I think Microsoft's way, in the end, is to brute force engineer their way out of the problem. Mm-hmm. They take pride in sort of rolling their own once they decide to roll it. Unless they hit major speed bumps, I wouldn't expect that they would buy too much search technology. I mean, and there are other things that could happen as well. Yahoo, for example, owns something like five different search technologies, not just singular search technologies, yeah, but networks of search technologies, AltaVista, AllTheWeb, Overture's own research efforts, Inktomi, among others. They may decide that they don't need one of them. Maybe they spin AltaVista off and sell it to the highest bidder, and that bidder could well be Microsoft. You know, it's hard to say exactly what might happen, but one way or the other, a couple years from now, Microsoft will have a robust search offering regardless.
So really, their focus really on this whole search space is to dominate the desktop, and I know a lot of these search engines are now launching these toolbars.
Right.
Is that really one of the core concerns that Microsoft has, is that they're getting replaced on the desktop by, you know, all these toolbars?
I think that it's a strategic consideration. I don't think at this point they're as concerned about it as they were about the browser, for example. But if I'm a Microsoft Network user, but I've got the Google toolbar that's always up, that means that there's a piece of real estate, a very valuable piece of real estate, that is not being monetized by Microsoft. It's being monetized by Google. I can guarantee that there will be a Microsoft toolbar-like thing mm-hmm. that's incorporated shortly into their offering. That little toolbar is an engine that drives hundreds of millions of dollars worth of revenue.
Microsoft has always had a search button, and it's always popped up that window on the left.
Right.
I mean, has that not been a big success for Microsoft?
I think it just depends on how you define success. Mm-hmm. If you define success by the fact that even though they have that feature, it hasn't stopped Google from
well, it's not as much in actually there all the time. You have to actually click on a button and it displays and all
right.
this kind of stuff. There's an additional step.
Right, and I think that they'll be working very hard to make search something that you simply can't
miss. Right?
Can't miss,
yeah.
Right.
Well, John, it was great having you on the show.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
We've been talking with John Battelle, who is the founder of the Industry Standard and was a co-founding editor of Wired, and we've been discussing his new Business 2.0 article about Microsoft's entry into the competitive search engine marketplace. And if you want to read the article, then go visit business2.com or pick up the September edition at the newsstands now.
Stay connected. In a moment, we'll be learning more about the Search Engine Strategies Conference in San Jose earlier this month, which Rob attended, and hear a couple of interviews from that event. This is Web Talk Eyes Radio. Everybody comes to Hollywood. They want to make it in the neighborhood. They like the smell of it in Hollywood. How could it hurt you when it hey, Bruce, what does your t-shirt say?
Take a look at this shirt.
Okay, Rubber Baby Bonker Busters. That's funny.
Oh, I just love this shirt.
I haven't seen that one before. Where in the world did you get that?
Just4Yucks.com.
Just4Yucks.com.
Yeah, Just4Yucks.com. They have more than 250 original hilarious designs that are available on t-shirts and mouse pads.
Wait, 250 tongue twister t-shirts?
Oh, you should see what they have. Cartoons, cliches, puns. They've got wordplay on all kinds of topics.
Well, what I want to know is, do they have computer t-shirts?
Oh, of course they do.
Oh, well, it sounds like JustForYucks.com has just about everything I can imagine.
Oh, they do. And they have a few things you probably couldn't imagine.
Oh, likewise.
Like professional wrestling in outer space.
Uh-huh.
And also the Roswell Rodeo, you know, the one featuring alien cowboys?
Oh, way cool. I like that. Do they put their designs on anything besides t-shirts and mouse pads?
JustForYucks.com. They've got coasters, pinback buttons, they've got magnets, keychains. Oh, you have to check them out.
Oh, sounds like I better check out JustForYucks.com.
Good idea.
And now, the Internet's future, the Web Talk Guys.
You're back and connected with the Web Talk Guys radio show, and my name is Rob Greenlee.
And I'm Dana Greenlee. Hey, Rob, you just got back from the Search Engine Strategies Conference out down there in San Jose in the Silicon Valley. And you brought back about 4 days' worth of industry insight and some audio recordings.
Yeah, I don't know. There's a lot to hold in my brain, 4 days of search engine stuff.
Well, you had your pocket PC to help you hold
that. Yes, I did. Well, the industry event was a true example of the showcase for growth and promise of the search engine marketplace and search marketing. It's fast becoming a $7 to $14 billion industry, depending on who you speak to. And I spent 4 days at this event that is put on every year by Jupiter Media Events and Danny Sullivan of SearchEngineWatch.com. And really, the big takeaway from the event that I got was pay for placement, sponsored links, and pay inclusion are here to stay, as they are just so effective at getting advertiser messages out there and are so profitable to search engine companies that it's really creating this booming search marketplace. I recorded some audio from the historic launch meeting of the Search Engine Marketing Professional Organization, or what is being called SEMPO at SEMPO.org. We're going to hear speeches given by Danny Sullivan, who's editor of SearchEngineWatch.com, and Safa Rashi, who is U.S. Bancorp Piper Jaffray's senior research analyst for internet media and marketing. And they're going to tell us why this new organization is needed and the growth potential of search marketing and advertising.
Here's the recording from the Search Engine Strategies Conference in San Jose. It was held at the DoubleTree Hotel on August 20th, about 7 p.m., Let's listen in. The first voice you'll hear is Barbara Cole. She's the CEO of WebMama.com and president of SEMPO.org. She introduces Danny Sullivan, editor of Search Engine Watch. And then right after Danny, you'll hear from Safa from U.S. Bancorp Piper Jaffray. He's also the author of The Golden Search Report. Let's listen in.
I really just want Danny to say a few words about why he thinks this is important and why we even started doing this in the first place. So if I could ask Danny, who doesn't need any introduction, of course, to come up.
Well, I think as Noel said that we would have these evening forums. Some of you are probably at one last that we did last night. And it did a lot of this emerge out of these people getting together saying, you know, we deal with these clients and they don't have any respect for us, or we don't have a common voice, or we're an industry but nobody seems to recognize it. They think we're a cottage industry, or I'm not a telemarketer. You know, well, okay, you are, but. And there had always been that stalling of, well, do we need to accredit everybody? Do we need to come up with some sort of standard? Do we need to do it? And I really thought last year in Dallas this like amazing breakthrough had been gotten to, where it was, look, we don't have to have the organization go out and try to standardize and approve and accredit every single SEM company that's out there. We can go out and just promote the whole idea that this is actually something that people should be doing, and I think it's a great thing. I've probably had three or four different people this conference asking, well, how big do you think the SEM firms are? How much money do you think they control? I don't know. I mean, I literally don't know, and nobody's ever surveyed it, and there's no really strong organization I could turn to, really, until now. I will expect that in about 6 months, I'll be able to go back to SEMPO and say, so give me a search engine marketing official view, or, you know, your company, your organization's official view, your group's view on where you think things are going and how things are doing. So I think that's why it's needed. I think that you're a big part of all this growth that has been happening, but you speak individually. And individual voices are great, but it's nice to have the collective voices as well. And so you get to be part of the collective. But that's a good thing. I think the other hard thing that especially the board of directors all, you know, were talking about and debating and really being concerned about was that there are definitely some people who are going to be wondering, well, what do I get out of this? And I want to be part of it, but do I have to pay? Or if I am going to pay, you better back it up, because, you know, I may not be in a position where I pay much. And there was a feeling that people should pay something to show some degree of commitment, and plus it's going to help the organization. And I come back to, I think, what Barbara alluded on as well. It's not, to me, the main reason that you, if you're thinking about joining SEMPO, would do it is not because you're thinking, what am I going to get out of it? Really, I think the reason you're going to do it is because you think that you're in a great industry and you want people to see that industry grow. You will eventually get out of it even more. Some of you are successful already. You may not think, oh, that's all right, I'll keep going. And that may be true, and you may be perfectly successful without it. But you may want to just sort of give back to this industry that a lot of people say has been really amazing for them. That, you know, nobody that I really know started out, or originally started out saying, I'm going to be a search engine marketer. They were all of something else. Now the kids are learning it in school. So anyway, that's enough rattling on, I suppose. I just want to share with you that, you know, really what an incredible amount of work the board of directors and the volunteers have all done. I've seen them working this stuff all behind the scenes. It's been a lot of time that they've put in. In Boston, different people came together saying, well, we should do it, let's do it, and talk is cheap. And they've really gone through and done it. It's not just, let's have a club. It's like a nonprofit organization. It's got things that are all set up. It has its website. It's a real honest-to-goodness thing, and I think it'll be great. So I hope you do, too. Next, Safa Rashi is going to speak to us. Again, I mentioned earlier, if you just get in, that Safa put together a report for Piper Jaffray called The Golden Search about how big this industry is becoming and the potential. And I think, there are two moments that showed me that this industry was really growing up. The first was Anthony Mueller's guide to search engine marketers. Where's Anthony? He's probably outside. And then the next was Safa's report, which I think was, again, as I said earlier, is excellent. So we'll let Safa get up and speak to us a minute about how he sees the industry growing.
Thanks. Thank you very much for kind words. It's great to be here. It's really a privilege to be here. I'm merely an observer and a reporter of what's going on in this industry, but as Barbara and Noel said, you are really shaping it, and it is, if I can feel the excitement, you must be feeling it 10 times more. So it's great to be here. Search is very hot, obviously. The reason we chose the name Golden Search, because I do think it's a golden opportunity. You all know that because it's working for your clients. It's working for your clients because it actually works for advertisers and for the customers. It's because it's the cheapest way they can reach customers. And they're satisfied. They're satisfied because it has the highest ROI for them. It has the highest conversion rate. So it really was the holy grail of all the internet services that have come and gone. I've been covering internet for the past 4 or 5 years, which is pretty much how long that is. And I haven't seen an industry that basically hit it so well in the right spot as search did. So the point is, this is just the beginning. You know, as Barbara mentioned, I think all of you are right now, despite the great success that I'm seeing, talking to many of you, are really trying to get a line item in there. This is the beginning. To me, this organization's members are right now at the point of being evangelists. You're introducing people to this really efficient way of catching customers. Now, think about it, what happens when you actually gain market share. Then your role will be much bigger than people who are introducing this new way, people who are evangelists. But as an organization and a group of companies and industry that will actually facilitate and create excess benefits. If I want to put my industry analyst hat on and try to see the future in the next 5-10 years, I can see that it would almost shake the way that the agency model has worked. In the past, the advertising agency model has basically been an aggregation of demand and maybe creative ideas, making things easier, facilitating it for advertisers so that they can get the 15% commission. I would urge you to look at it differently. Right now, getting those commissions is difficult, I know, but as you move on to the next step, you should be able to get part of that excess profit that you create for the advertisers, not just the base commission. And I think that's entirely possible, and in fact, it may entirely shape the future of the agency as we know it today. Yeah. There is certainly a lot more benefit by using search in the most efficient way. We are in the beginning stages of it, and the services that you offer to your clients are helping them get going. But as I mentioned, as search becomes more prevalent, and as it takes market share from others, you will have much larger companies with much more complex needs coming to you and saying, how do we get more out of search? We already know we can go to Overture and Google and look smart and buy search. That's where you can create what I would call those excess profits that you can take a part of, and that part can grow. It is obviously a small industry right now. I don't have figures on it, but I can see this industry really potentially growing to be much bigger, and it's great to be here to speak to you. It is really a very, very exciting time for all of you, and I wish you luck, and I do encourage all of you to join Semco. It's a great organization.
You've just listened to the historic launch meeting of the Search Engine Marketing Professional Organization, or SEMPO, They're at simpo.org. That's it for this week. Thank you so much for listening. Please be sure to tune in next week for more news around the web with Web Talk Guys Radio.
Thank you for downloading the Web Talk Guys. Bookmark us now for next week. Same Web Talk Guys time, same Web Talk Guys channel.